So now I'm going to talk about this word that we probably don't use very much in our everyday lives called equanimity. You know, as an idea, as a practice, as a goal. I try to discourage, to some degree, having goals with the practice because that just creates a sense of striving. But it is important that I think we have some goals as to why we would do this. And so, really, in a very big way, the goal or the aim of meditation practice, or really the aim of Dharma practice, is to establish what we would call equanimity. Now, equanimity is about balance. It's about understanding. It's the full understanding of the way things are, the way that we experience stress in our lives, the way that we cause stress in our lives, the way that we cause happiness and well-being in our lives. And also, it balances out. So it balances wisdom with empathy or compassion. It's a really pretty amazing quality of mind. It means in its translation, there in the middleness. It's to be at ease, to be there in the middleness of life. And so in many ways we could say that we're there in the middleness of suffering and the end of suffering. We're there in the middleness of all of the joy and wonderful things of this life and all of the sadness and sorrow of this life. In the middle of that. The 10,000 joys and the 10,000 sorrows of life. Equanimity gives us what we need to be able to hold those two realities in a way that's balanced. It also does a really good job of helping us with that black and white thinking of it's either good or it's bad. Life is both wonderful and quite scary and sad and tragic. It's both and, isn't it? So that kind of throws us off. We don't like that so much. Because it's the term that I have used over the years that makes a lot of sense to me is this idea of grateful sorrow. That I am both deeply grateful for my life and I'm very grateful for my practice and I'm grateful and there's many things about my life that I appreciate. And I'm also find myself at moments tremendously filled with a sense of sadness and loss and disappointment and regret. Both. And so that's really kind of how it is, isn't it? For everybody. Not just for me, not just for you. This is basically how life is. We get both. And so we have to be clear, so there's an understanding of that. We need to be clear that that's how it is for everybody. And so that understanding allows us to begin balancing out these factors. And also it teaches us or might encourage us or even inspire us to develop qualities of heart to hold that. Being able to develop friendliness and kindness to hold the just stress, the anxiety, the disappointment, the dissatisfaction that we find in our daily lives, being able to hold that with more ease. Being kind to ourselves, being kind to others, being friendly, not causing harm, intentional harm. It allows us to have compassion and empathy for that which is difficult and sad and disappointing and suffering and loss and grief. It gives us something to do with that. It gives us a quality that we can hold that with. It gives us the ability to forgive. To forgive ourselves for our shortcomings, to forgive ourselves when we don't do it right, when we don't always say or do the right thing. We're so hard on ourselves all the time. It also lets us and encourages us to be forgiving of others. Just like me, I make mistakes. Just like you, you make mistakes. Allows us to develop that gratitude and that appreciation, which I think for a lot of us in our culture is hard. It's hard to not take things for granted, isn't it? know, then it's so it's kind of the seed and the fruit. Right? It's like if you look at a mango seed, and you look at a ripe, ready-to-eat mango, the ripe mango is way more interesting than the seed, right? The seed's just like a rock. But we have to acknowledge that that ripe, delicious fruit came from this hard, rock-like, not fun to eat at all, seed. And so this is why a lot of times when we start practicing, we kind of can be dissatisfied or disappointed in the seed. How long is it going to take for this seed to turn into a piece of fruit? I don't know. Probably a little while. Probably not going to happen tonight. Maybe. Depends on how well you've been taking care of that seed. Right, so there's even that. Then there's that even that cultivation analogy that we actually have to plant the seed and then we have to take care of it. And we have to tend to it constantly with care and attention, with care and attention. Constantly, 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 constantly. So we can produce the best fruit possible. And so equanimity just starts, and you even did a little bit of it tonight. Equanimity just begins when we just sit, and we close our eyes, and we breathe, and we just begin to see that we can tolerate what's happening. We can tolerate the restlessness in the mind. We can tolerate the onslaught of thoughts and plans and memories, and am I doing it right? I think I'm doing it right. I don't know. It was better last week. I don't know about this. The doubt, the fear, the questioning. You can tolerate that. You can tolerate the body. We're a little sleepy, a little tired. There's pain. There's discomfort. We see in mindfulness early on that we actually have, we have this ability to tolerate. We have the ability to have some patience. And so that's the seed, that's the beginning of equanimity. There in the middleness of the meditative experience, which often is just kind of like work. Waiting for something to happen, wondering when, where's the inner peace? Where's the serenity? Where's the compassion? It's like a dry wasteland in here. So we need a little bit of humility, we need a little bit of tolerance to be able to begin and to start the process. So we need some equanimity right from the beginning, and we find that we have it to some degree. And then we go on and we sit more, we sit more, we learn more, we sit more. We see that we have capacity to be more kind and friendly to ourselves. We see that that's possible. That gives us some confidence. We see that actually we might have a lot more compassion than we thought we did. We start to put that to work. And so we kind of start to take care of it. And equanimity is the fourth and final of the heart practices. So all of the heart practices merge and arrive in this balanced state of equanimity. Just like the four foundations of mindfulness and all of the mindfulness practices. And it's the seventh factor of awakening. It's the seventh factor, so we've done all this work, and from mindfulness all the way down to equanimity, we arrive in this state of equanimity there in the middleness of it. And it doesn't mean that the sadness is going to go away. It doesn't mean that the stress is going to go away. It doesn't mean that life is going to be perfect and always go my way now and get everything I want now. It doesn't mean that. It means that we're able to respond to that now. It means that we have the tools that it takes to manage and tolerate and be with the ups and downs that we go through. And so there's, you know, we have these oftentimes called the eight vicissitudes or the eight worldly winds, that there's, all of us are constantly being bombarded with these parallel ideas of, you know, gain and loss. Constantly, every day, you get stuff, you lose stuff, you get stuff, you lose stuff. The gain and loss of money, right? Getting paid and out it goes, getting paid, out it goes, getting paid, out it goes. And This is how it is. We get things, we lose things. We get jobs, we lose jobs. We gain relationships, we lose relationships. This is how it is. We don't always get what we want. Sometimes we get what we don't want. Sometimes we lose what we like, what we have. We don't like that. So we like gain, we don't like loss, but we get both. Equanimity lets us receive and lets us be open and remember, oh yeah, that's right, this happens. Helps us from being so pissed off or so frustrated or so angry when that happens again. How many times have you lost something? You know, it's like happened 2 million times and we still get pissed off when it happens, right? Like we should know by now, oh yeah, this is life, this is how it is. We get things, we lose things. The reality, one of the biggest things that gets us in so much trouble is the pleasure-pain dichotomy or the fact that life is both pleasurable. We have this, lots of things that are a source of happiness and joy and pleasure, and there's also pain, physical pain, emotional pain, mental pain, anguish, anxiety, emotions that we don't like. Do you still have emotions you don't particularly care for so much? Those aren't going away. They don't. That's not the deal. You don't get to remove those. Anger, sadness, fear. I'm sure you have a really nice list of the ones that you don't particularly care for. And actually, all our lists are probably very identical. But we learn that we can hold them, we can respond, we can manage that. The full range of human emotions, we find that we actually can learn to manage them, we can learn to be emotional, which we don't particularly care for. You know, so there's that pleasure and pain constantly, every day, one moment to the next. Sometimes it's like this, sometimes it's like that. Roller coaster. The reality of praise and blame. I like to get praise, I like that. I don't like to be blamed. I get both. Also, these things, oftentimes praise and blame is something that actually happens internally. You ever find yourself kind of, you got your own back and things are going well, you're like, you know, Dave, doing pretty good. Doing great, I got your back. And as soon as I make a mistake, it totally turns. It turns into blame and guilt. You see this in your mind, it's one moment, it's giving you credit and praise and telling you you're doing it great, and then 2 hours later, 5 minutes later, not so much. You do it wrong. You always do it wrong. You never do it right. How come it's like this? It's always like this. It's always bad, and it's your fault, and you never do it right. We get both. And we get it, obviously, from external, too. We get it from our people and our jobs and our relationships and our friendships, our family. We get this. Not going to stop. When we're able to remember that that's part of it. So when it happens, we're not so sideswiped. And then we're able to not take it so personally, maybe. We're able to be more forgiving, more kind, more friendly, more compassionate with ourselves and others. And it doesn't bite so much. It doesn't hurt so much. It doesn't sting so much. And then the fourth set is, there's a couple ways it's translated. My favorite translation is status and disgrace, which I think is very applicable to our world and our time here in 2014, that we all crave and are preoccupied with our status and role in the culture and society. I am my job. Who am I? What's my role? How do we compare ourselves to others? This one has got a lot of suffering tied into it, if you pay attention to it. The need, the craving, the clinging for status, as if that's going to give you long-lasting happiness. You know, just watch commercials on TV, they're all about status. Right car, right job, right mind state. If you don't like your mind state, you can get medication to change it. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants an upgrade. Priority status, upgrade. I fly a lot, and I just always laugh when I'm at the airport, and they have to, there's like 8 different statuses before I get on the plane, because I'm in group 3, you know, that's my status, group 3, you know, it's like, and of course nobody has it, just like 2 people who get it, and they just sit there and they go, gold, priority, platinum, and it's like they have this whole status, and you get special service if you have the special status. We're very status culture. It's actually not that different than the ancient Indian caste system. Except for in our culture, well, sometimes in some degree you are born into it, right? But very much where we view ourselves and where we fit into the social structure based on how much money we make, our background, our preferences, our sexual preferences, and just a wide range of suffering that goes along with that. And then the flip side of that is the disgrace, is when we lose our status. Has anybody had a really good job? Has anybody ever lost a really good job that they had at one point or another? It doesn't feel so good, does it? Or maybe it does, depending on how much equanimity you have. Right? I have a lot of equanimity right now. I have chosen and put a lot of effort into being homeless and jobless. And I'm so happy right now that I don't have an NES bill coming anytime soon, or a mortgage bill, or anywhere to go in particular. Right. So equanimity is a... it lets us balance out the mind and the heart. It lets us keep the view wider. And it also rests on this phrase, actually. There's a very interesting thing about equanimity. As some of you probably know, we use a lot of phrases in heart practice meditation, which is just kind of using the cognitive phrase. I mean, we might say, may I be at ease? May I learn to forgive myself? We use these cognitive phrases to try to drop down into the heart space, to try to evoke or inspire these qualities of heart. And so... the equanimity phrase that I like and the one that I use most often is that we understand, so it's about understanding. We understand that our happiness and our freedom is dependent upon our actions, not our wishes. And so again, sometimes we can get tricked into thinking that meditation is about sitting still and not doing anything, right? But that's one of the 8 factors that we develop in the practice is meditation, sitting quietly, learning the equanimity of sitting and being with the body, heart, mind, and all the reactivity that comes up and breathing through that and holding that with some careful attention. But we know this too, don't we? That your intentions are important and good. It's one of the path factors. The Buddha places a lot of emphasis on the importance and the power of intention. But as much as intention is very important and very much emphasized, if it's not followed up by action, it's very empty. And this is really an area where a lot of us get and stay stuck. Is that there's something that happens. I don't know what it is. I haven't been able to figure it out. There's probably a variety of things. But you've been in the experience that you really want to do something, you have the best intention to do it, and you just can't seem to follow through. You want to meditate every day, but you don't. You want to eat better, but you don't. You want to exercise, but you don't. We oftentimes want to do things that are good for us, but we don't. Equanimity reminds us and encourages us that, yeah, good intentions, really helpful. If it's not followed up by actions, it just stays in the mind. It just kind of rolls around. And so, again, a lot of times these heart qualities, especially compassion, can be one of these qualities that really inspires us and really gives us the courage to move through the discomfort. A lot of times, going from intention to action, a lot of times put this in a place where we're going to have to come into contact with just some vulnerability, some discomfort, fear. And so, you know, there's a degree of anytime we learn something new, There's always a little bit of a steep learning curve, isn't there? So we have to deal with the confusion, the fear around that. And how do we work through that and remember and acknowledge and begin to learn that actually it's our actions that provide long-term happiness and well-being and ease in this life. It's making the hard choices. It's letting go of the destructive behaviors. It's starting the new, healthy actions, behaviors, decisions. And for many of us, this is very difficult to do. You know, sometimes we're very loyal to our suffering. Very loyal. We don't want to abandon it. It's been with us for so long. You know, so we have a hard time with this for some reason. And so being able to move from intentions and being able to actually follow through with the action. You know, and this includes our language, this includes our speech. This includes oftentimes having difficult conversations with people. To some degree, it actually puts us in a place of having to deal with conflict, and we don't like to deal with conflict all the time. We don't like to make scary changes. But again, if these things, if these ideas and this understanding is backed up with compassion and it's backed up with some confidence, we start to see that we can do it. And the beautiful thing about it is once we start to do it, we start to see that we can do it. It's much easier to stay with it. It's much easier to stay with it. So usually, you know, they would say faith, which is to me a troubling term. But confidence is earned. You don't just decide to have confidence, right? You don't just choose to be confident. Unless you're arrogant. That is easy. But it's something that we do. We deal with the discomfort. We deal with the discomfort. We do it in spite of the fear. We do it in spite of the discomfort. And then we go, hey, that wasn't so... How many times have you done something that seemed like it was going to be so scary and so difficult, and then you didn't? You're like, that was no big deal. Actually, that wasn't scary at all. And then you're much more likely to do it again, aren't you? And so equanimity really, really helps us do this, helps us make these kinds of changes. I was talking to I'm almost finished with this book that I've been writing, so I've been trying to go to places and I've been trying to go to places that have bad Wi-Fi connections so I can get some writing done. Or like some places I can't ever get on the Wi-Fi anyway because I'm not that good at computers. So I go to places that have bad Wi-Fi or where it's difficult to get on because then I won't be distracted by the internet. And I went to Fido's today and the line was too long, so I left. And then I was walking to my car and I got a phone call from somebody who's a really, really old friend. It's actually one of my first girlfriend's mom. And the last time I talked to her, we had a very difficult conversation. Which actually a lot of the conversations I have with her are very difficult and very rewarding because she's one of these people who really, really holds me accountable to things and somebody who's really been supportive of me in my practice but also is really willing to say, hey, I wasn't happy about that thing you did or that thing you said. So it's really one of these things. And I saw her name on the phone and I was like, oh, fuck. And I was like, all right. And I took the call and... She just wanted to talk to me and ask me how I was doing. And then I reminded her. I said, well, you know, I said, I appreciate you calling. I know that the last conversation we had was not really easy for me. And it was just like really lighthearted. I thought we were going to get into it again and we didn't. And it was just like, I felt really grateful. I was like, oh, one of the reasons why I have such a great relationship with this woman is because of the fact that we've had a lot of really difficult conversations over the years. In fact, most of the people in my life that I really respect, my teachers, Noah Levine, and some of the other teachers that I work with, most of the conversations I have with them are not fun for me. Anybody who's ever had a good sponsor or a good therapist, or, you know, we don't particularly like talking to these people. If they're any fucking good at what they do, then you probably won't like talking to them half the time. If you love talking to your therapist, you ought to get a new one. Because these are the people that we want to have in our lives who hold our feet to the fire. These people in our lives who see us, who see when we're not measuring up to the standards or to the values that we know are important. And they help us, they give us the courage, they inspire us to do that. You know, so it's so important to have these kinds of people. Even if it's just one person or a couple of people. You know. And it's like, you know, the people who care about us enough that they're willing to have a difficult conversation with us when they see that we're doing something that we probably shouldn't be doing, or aren't doing some things that maybe we could or should be doing. And so it's just, it's such a head trip, because this equanimity, or this even this idea of things being dialectical, or the paradox of it all, it's like life is really, really great and really, really tragic. It's like, how can you get both of those views? How do you hold both those views in a way that we don't get caught up in trying to deny difficult experiences and just accumulate as much pleasure as we can, then create various forms of addiction around that? Or how do we not focus on the negative and become depressed and forget about the other side of it? And usually most of us are wired one way or the other. You know, there's the greedy, I'm the greedy optimist, kind of. And then there's the sort of pessimist. And so that we all have our views and our mind and our awareness is colored by these things. So sometimes it's just good to know, you know, how we are with this type of stuff. But again, how do we lean back enough? How can we learn that this is just how it is? The Buddha saw this, right? He saw this very clearly, which is probably why Buddhism is not that popular for a practice. You notice we don't have a $17 million church to go to on Sunday nights. We got our dusty little building over here. Right? Because we don't, you know, it's a very pragmatic and a very realistic and a very, it's very much about facing the human experience here and now in this life, in this experience that we have. And just being honest about the difficulties in our lives. And continuing to be honest, and to not give in to the denial, the repression, the avoiding. You know, if I just ignore it long enough, it will go away. It doesn't go away, does it? It gets bigger. It gets worse. Right? And then the more we're able to do that, then we don't regret later on down the road, right? One of the two key players that usually put us in a place of feeling sorry for ourselves or low self-esteem, low self-worth, low self-view, which we see a cultural epidemic of this kind of attitude people have about themselves, is denial and regret. Those are the key players in that game. Denying all of the things that we actually on some level know are true, the unwillingness to be honest about the difficulties in our lives. And then when we don't measure up, when we're not able to follow through with our intentions to improve, we regret that later on down the road. And we just exacerbate that whole process. Denial and regret, denial and regret, denial and regret. And so we owe it to ourselves, especially with mindfulness practice, as we become more aware of these things, we really owe it to ourselves to do the things that we know, because there's so much going on that we don't even know. You know, we owe it to ourselves to do what we can with the information we have now, so we can become more aware of these causes. What are some of the things that causes suffering in my life? What are some of the thoughts? What are some of the attitudes? What are some of the actions? What are some of the things that I'm doing that contribute to my suffering? And usually if we're honest and we sit still for a few moments, we don't have to look too far to find the answer. You know? And then if we're able to do this, we're able to have some optimism, we're able to have some positive inclining towards, we're able to have some confidence that we can alleviate these causes, we can You know, we can overcome. And then we become better skilled in that. We become more skilled at that process, which is historically called the Four Noble Truths, is being able to continue to create a positive feedback loop. And so all of these things, mindfulness, the four foundations of mindfulness, loving kindness, compassion, forgiveness, appreciation, generosity, all of these practices all flow into this ocean of equanimity. And equanimity is really ultimately the goal. It's the final fruit. It's the seventh factor of awakening, is that we wake up, and we remember, oh yeah, life is wonderful and tragic. It's paradox. You know, and that way we don't get lost in denial about that. We don't repress those parts of our experience. We allow ourselves to experience all of it. You know, the pleasure and the pain, the gain and the loss. We allow ourselves to experience the full range of what it means to be human. And sometimes it's great, and sometimes it's not so great. And so we see this, the whole thread of the Dharma is always, always about impermanence, right? It's just impermanence hard at work in every moment, just turning it over. One day after another, one emotion after another, one thought after another. And so we can see that actually there's so much going on that we don't have the ability to control, or we don't get to choose a lot of what happens, but we can learn to relate to it differently. And so it's, you know, the seed and the fruit, it's the moment-to-moment experience and the big picture. It's both and. And so what we're going to do, we'll do this longer practice tonight around it, but I'll kind of set it up a little bit for those of you who aren't familiar. I do kind of a modified version of this practice. So we're really going to do everything tonight. So your chances of actually getting enlightened tonight are very high. I'm grateful that you're all here, because at least two or three of you are totally going to just... Totally, yeah, see? And so we use phrases, and so what we're going to do is we're going to start with mindfulness phrases. So we're going to use, I'll tell you what the phrases are going to be, and they're going to be very repetitive. But the first thing we're going to do is we're going to use the breathing, we're going to use mindfulness of breathing to access felt sense, feeling, which is just about present time experience, feeling inward, feeling what's here to be felt, feeling sounds, feeling the breath, feeling the body, feeling the heart, feeling the energetic quality of the mind. To feel and to know is the key aspects of mindfulness. Feeling what's here to be felt and knowing what it is. Feeling sadness, knowing sadness. Feeling joy, knowing joy. Feeling peace, knowing peace. Feeling discomfort, knowing discomfort. And so we need to feel and we need to know. And this puts us in the best possible place. We feel, we know, and then we develop this kindness. This, oh, may I be at ease with the discomfort. May I be at ease with the happiness. Sometimes we have a hard time being at ease with happiness because we become too excited. May we learn to care. So we feel, we know, we're to some degree easeful, friendly, care, empathy. And caring and empathy and compassion is specifically aimed at what's unpleasant, what's challenging, what's unwanted, right? And then including forgiveness in that package. And then, don't want to get too bummed out, so we want to bring gratitude and appreciation to that which is pleasant, that which is agreeable, pleasant sensations in the body, even energy in the mind, there might be emotions that are happening. So as we learn to know what's arising in the present time experience, we learn that we can respond to it. And if we can feel, know, learn to respond, we start to incline towards equanimity. And so we'll do this as an experiment. I haven't done this in quite some time, but I think it's quite an important practice. So, find a way to sit. We're going to do a guided meditation on this now. Finding a way to sit, returning into a meditative posture. Allowing the eyes to close. And we'll start and end with the bell. And just as we begin to just see if you can incline towards some effort, this practice is going to take a little bit more effort maybe than you're used to. So just staying, following the instructions as best as you are able, and coming back to the instructions as many times as is needed. So just breathing in, breathing out, inclining the mind towards feeling so that you can feel the body, the outline of the body, the shape of the body, temperature of the body, size, energetic quality, feeling the clothes on your skin, body in the chair, rising and falling with the breath. Opening to sound. And just dropping this phrase down into the breath, down into the body. I feel you. I feel this body. So that you're coming into contact with a sense of familiarity. There's something familiar about this experience. You've been here before. Breathing in, breathing out. I feel you. As we feel, we can start with some degree of equanimity, just some tolerance towards the experience, some acceptance. I feel you. All of you. Also, I feel you and I know you. Knowing the in-breath as breathing in. I know that I'm breathing in. I know that I'm breathing out. I know there's a body. I know this experience. Breathing in, breathing out, I feel you, I know you. knowing if the breath is deep or shallow. Noticing where the breath is most predominant, the chest, the belly, the face. I feel you, I know you. I feel you, I know you. I feel you, I know you. And then inclining the heart towards kindness. May I be at ease with my body. May I be at ease with my heart. May I be at ease with this mind. I feel you, I know you. Friendliness towards what can be felt, towards what can be known. Leaving nothing out. I feel you, I know you. Friendliness. Kindness. Using mindfulness, feeling and knowing, friendliness. I feel you and I know you. Feeling the sensation of the in and out breath at the heart center. Inclining towards compassion. I care about you. I care about this body. I care about this mind. I care about this heart. I care about the difficulties and challenges that I face in my life. I feel you, I know you, I care about you. And if at moments it feels challenging or too much, just return to mindfulness of breathing, relax, start over. No big deal. I feel you. I know you. I care about you. I care. Just using the phrases as fast or slow as you like, but just letting them drop into the heart center with the breath. I feel you. I know you. I care about you. I care about you, and therefore I also forgive you. Offering forgiveness. I forgive you for making mistakes. I forgive you for not always saying the right thing. I forgive you for emotional experiences. I forgive the mind for its anxiety. The body for its discomfort. I forgive you for being human and making mistakes. I forgive you. I feel you, I know you, I care about you, and I forgive you. Just dropping those phrases into the meditation over and over. I feel you, I know you. I care about you and I forgive you. And if you find the mind wandering or getting caught up in stories or any of that, just return to the breath. Begin again. No big deal. Breathing in, I feel you. Breathing out, I know you. Breathing in, I care about you. Breathing out, I forgive you. Relaxing the body, softening the breath. I feel you, I know you, I care about you, I forgive you, and inclining the mind towards happiness and joy, success and well-being by adding the phrase, I appreciate you. I appreciate you for taking care of me and feeding me. I appreciate you for the good choices you've made and all of the challenges that you've overcome. I'm grateful for you. I appreciate you. Thank you. Thank you for taking care of me. I appreciate you. So adding that into the stream of meditation, I feel you and I know you. I care about you, I forgive you, and I appreciate you. Noticing what phrases come easy, what phrases not so much. Learning whatever there is to be learned about your inner experience. I feel you and I know you. I care about you, I forgive you, and I appreciate you. Feel you, I know you. Care about you, I forgive you. And I also appreciate you. And then opening the mind, heart into this idea, this practice of equanimity. I understand that my happiness and my freedom is dependent upon my actions, not my wishes. It's what I do is what matters, not what I want. I understand that my happiness, my well-being, and my freedom is dependent upon my actions, not my wishes. And therefore, I feel you, and I know you. I care about you, and I also forgive you. I appreciate you. I'm grateful towards you. And I understand that my happiness and freedom is entirely dependent upon my actions, not my wishes. So looking into this experience to see what can be learned here now. Feeling inward to the mind, to the body, to the heart. Feeling whatever's there to be felt. I feel you, all of you, leaving no part out. Knowing what's here to be known. If there's any difficulty, any sadness, suffering, anger, fear, extending compassion towards that. I care about that. I care about this life. I care about everything that's been hard. I care about you. I'm just extending compassion towards any part that might need it. Extending forgiveness towards any part of your experience that might need it. I forgive you. I forgive you for causing me harm. I forgive you for making mistakes. I forgive you for everything. I forgive you. No longer willing to withhold forgiveness from myself. And then inclining the mind towards goodness, pleasantness, happiness, joy, success, and anything in your life right now that needs or requires gratitude and appreciation. I appreciate you. Offering yourself appreciation. And also seeing if you can look inward and to see if you can understand or notice that these are the qualities it's going to take for true happiness. Freeing the mind, liberating the heart. So we breathe in, we breathe out, and we feel and we know, and we feel and we know. Be the one who feels. Be the one who knows. Be the one who cares. Do that. Be the one who forgives and be the one who is forgiven. Be the one who appreciates in value, in goodness, and happiness. We'll just hold this in silence for just another minute or so, using any of these practices to do whatever you see fit here in this present time experience.